It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. If you've ever taken a psychology class, you've probably heard the story of Phineas Gage. He was a railroad worker who survived a terrible accident in which an iron rod was driven through his head. He's remembered in the psychology books because that accident taught us a whole lot about how the brain works. But that's not why we're talking about him today. We're talking about him because a beautiful horse named Jamberry had a very similar accident. Dr. Stephanie Kasten is an associate professor of equine surgery at Iowa State University. She is the vet who saved Jamberry. Dr. Kasten, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And now, nobody was there with Jamberry when this happened, but tell me what we think happened.
Yes, correct. The owners actually found her with the metal pole in her head in the morning when they went to do chores, and they had done chores the previous night and everyone was fine, and they found her early the next morning like this. So she was alone when it happened, but the best that we can figure is that she was grazing through the fence, and the fence in this case was made of metal panels that are welded on each, bars were welded on each end, and she probably was trying to eat grass on the other side and push through. And one of the poles had a loose weld and was able to push her head through, and then that loose end got stuck behind her jaw when she tried to pull back. And in the process of trying to free herself, it seems that she not only drove the rod through her head, but then it became disconnected at the other end as well. So when they found her in the morning, they found her with this entire metal pole, which I estimate was about 8 feet long, all the way through her head, and then she was just standing in the middle of the paddock.
Wow. And I can imagine that having something like this happen, this could have killed her instantly, I would think. So the pole had gone through her head. I also imagine the horror that they responded to finding her with. What did they do?
Right. So they were, of course, horrified, and they immediately called their local veterinarian to come out and help them. And they, of course, weren't quite sure what to do, but she was standing. She was stable. Their veterinarian arrived on the scene and assessed her. And certainly, yes, it could have been a fatal injury, but she was lucky enough that it did go through some structures that were important, but she actually didn't damage any structures that would have instantly caused her death. And their veterinarian worked with them to get her on in the trailer and transported to us. So she had to be transported in a trailer, and they worked to make sure that even though the pole was still in her head, that it wouldn't hit anything in the trailer, and secured her and then sent her on her way to us so that we could do surgery and stabilize her further.
Now, I can imagine a vet looking at this and saying, we should put this horse down because this is a terrible injury and we don't want her to suffer. What was the evidence that made the local vet think, okay, actually, we can probably help her?
Well, you know, that's a good point. It's always assessment on the scene can be difficult, and it's always a decision that you have to make. But again, the fact that she was standing and she was stable allowed him to be able to assess her vital signs, and she actually could walk around of her own volition. And he didn't know, of course, at first, and neither did we, what all she had damaged and whether it would be feasible to save her. But the owners were very dedicated and willing to try, and so he called us and said, I've got this horse. I don't know exactly what all is involved, but they would like to save her if they can, and she's standing and moving. We're able to get her on a trailer, so we want to send her to you.
All right, so she got to you. She still had this pole through her head, because that's not the kind of thing you just pull out.
Right.
What did you do?
Well, one of the first things that we did when she walked in the door, we put a catheter in so that we could start to give her some fluid. She had lost quite a bit of blood, as you can imagine. And because of that, she needed some replacement. And we started assessing her again, what was her heart rate, that sort of thing. And then pretty quickly thereafter, after we had given her a little sedation and pain meds to calm her and make it easier for her, we actually cut the pole off so that it was quite a bit shorter, so that we could then maneuver her around the hospital, take x-rays without having that whole long part of the pole sticking out. And then we didn't remove it until later. But the first thing we did was really stabilize her, assess her condition, and then shorten the pole.
So once you had the pole cut down and you decided it was time to remove it, tell me about that surgery. How did that go?
Well, we had some concern that there may be something that would start bleeding when we removed it. So we did take x-rays first with the pole in place. And those were some of the pictures, you know, that people have seen online. You know, they've seen the x-rays with this pretty dramatic looking large metal object in the head.
Yes.
And so that part gave us an idea of where it went, because behind the jaw where it entered, there is a structure called the guttural pouch, and it contains the carotid arteries. And that was a real concern, that perhaps the pole was holding off one of these vessels, and we removed it, there may be massive bleeding or some other decompensation. So when we removed the pole, she was already asleep. So we went ahead and anesthetized her first so that we had control of the situation. She wasn't moving. She wasn't worried or in distress. And we removed the pole. And she did have one vessel that was bleeding that I clamped off right away. But amazingly, and again, that's part of the interesting part of this story, amazingly, she had missed all of those carotid arteries and most of the large nerves that lie right there with them. And we were able to then roll her into surgery and start basically doing wound repair at that point and piecing together some of the skin and of course, cleaning the wound. Because once we removed the pole, all of the debris and metal flakes that had come with the pole needed to be removed or lavaged out with saline, that sort of thing.
After surgery, what were your major concerns? You knew you had stopped the bleeding, but again, I mean, this is her brain. This is her head. What were your major concerns as she began to come out of anesthesia?
Yeah, so our major concerns at this point were really nerve function, because after we had removed the pole, we did take her and we did a CT scan or a CAT scan. So that gave us a little better idea of the exact path of the pole. And we knew that it hadn't gotten into the brain, as in the Phineas Gage case, you know, he had damage to his brain, but she had just narrowly missed the brain.
Okay.
And the pole had gone through the sinus. We knew she had missed those vessels when we pulled the pole out, but it had destroyed part of her pharyngeal area, which is the back of the throat near where the esophagus is. And we knew that there was some nerve damage. She had avoided a lot of the major nerves that help function with swallowing, that sort of thing. But she did have some nerve damage. And so our biggest concern was she going to be able to eat so that she could maintain her own nutrition and hydration? And she was pretty amazing and pretty tough. She woke up after surgery and went back to the stall. And when she was awake enough, I offered her a handful of hay. And she actually took a bite. And it was quite slow and a little bit incoordinated because she did have some nerve damage. But she was actually able to eat starting the day that we woke her up from surgery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, and there's an additional part to this story. Jamberry is pregnant, right?
Right, right. And that's one of the things, of course, that prompted the owners to, you know, really make sure that they were going to every effort to see if there were any options for her, because she was carrying a valuable foal, and the foal did well. We checked it often while she was in the hospital, and one of our reproductive specialists even did an ultrasound at one point and did fetal sexing, which tells us that it appeared that it's a filly, which the owners were very excited about because they wanted a girl, and she's still pregnant and due to foal this spring. So that part was icing on the cake to the rest of the case.
How long did she stay with you at the hospital?
She was with us for a little under 2 months, I believe. She didn't necessarily need to stay that long, but the owners had to travel and they wanted to leave her with us rather than, you know, having to have someone take care of her at home.
A pet sitter. Right?
Yep. Yeah, you don't want to leave your pet sitter with a horse with a hole in its head.
Oh my goodness. And how did things heal?
Well, she healed quite well. We did have some tissue that died off, which, as you can imagine, if there was that much trauma to the tissues, even if we clean everything up and suture it back together, some of it lost blood supply. And so in the process of the body cleaning itself up, They will have what's called sloughing of the tissue, so the tissue will die off and then be replaced by new tissue as it kind of contracts in. And so she looked really great for the first few days, and then she started to have some of this tissue dying off. So we had to do a lot of wound care as we went. And we also were flushing her sinus because, of course, this had entered her sinus. So we would daily lavage her sinus in the early days after surgery. But it came down over the long term to a lot of wound care because she did have to heal some of this on her own, despite the fact that we sutured some of it because of that death of the tissue right. from such trauma.
What do you think her prognosis is long term? I know that, you know, the embryo is doing well and she's expected to carry it to full term. What do you think about her life after that?
Yeah, she does have some permanent dysfunction. It's mild, but she does have a little bit of difficulty eating in that she's just a little bit slower than she maybe normally would be. And she does have some chronic nasal discharge. So I think in that respect, she probably will have those. It's been long enough that if she was going to recover, it's unlikely that things are going to change at this point, but those are pretty minor and she functions pretty much like a normal horse other than that. So I think that, you know, of course, if she was going to have more foals in the future, that certainly would be easy enough for her to do. So the prognosis there is excellent. She may not be, you know, a show horse because she has some scars and that sort of thing, but I don't think that was ever the intention for her. And if she was able to have foals or live out her life in a pasture, I think that everyone would be quite happy with that.
Now, this is obviously a bizarre and unusual case. You treat a lot of horses, though, and horses have a tendency to have kind of crazy injuries like this.
They do, actually. They are prey animals, and they do have a strong fight-or-flight response at times, and certainly depends on the horse. But a lot of them, if they're scared, their reaction is not to just stand still and think about it. Their reaction is to try and get away, to try and run, to try and get out of whatever predicament they're in. And, you know, in her case, that seems to be exactly what happened, is that she got caught, and so instead of waiting for someone to come and help her, she tried to free herself and ended up with this pole that went through her head. And we see a lot of injuries on, you know, horses live outside. So fences or other things, even such as, you know, wood. I've seen sticks and other things that just, again, an improbable accident that the horse stepped on it and it just happened to impale itself or it got a laceration. There's so many different injuries that they get because of the nature of where they live and their reaction to their environment.
There are some really macabre jokes about it. And there's, I think, this idea that horses are not easy to treat, that if a horse gets a bad injury, they're almost always euthanized. I remember a Far Side cartoon.
Yes.
About the equine chapter of veterinary medicine, and all of the, you know, the answers were shoot the horse, shoot the
yes.
horse, shoot the horse. So tell me more about equine medicine, because clearly we've come a long way.
We have come a long way. And, you know, that used to be the case to some degree, that a lot of these serious injuries, the best option was humane euthanasia. But we have made a lot of advancements. We do still have limitations because of their size. So some of the fractures and other injuries that we can fix in people or in small animals, for instance, some of the larger bones up higher, the femur in an adult horse, those are oftentimes difficult to impossible to fix, depending on the fracture configuration, because, again, you have an animal that weighs 1,200 to 2,000 pounds, and the implants that we have available to fix fractures like that simply won't hold up to the horse's weight. And sometimes they won't tolerate some certain treatments just because it's difficult for them to live that way. So, for instance, very difficult for them to live on three legs, whereas we see dogs with amputated legs all the time. So we've made a lot of strides, but we are still limited just because of their sheer size.
Now, you've made these incredible strides scientifically in medicine, but at the same time, we seem to be dealing with a real shortage of veterinarians in rural areas and large animal vets.
Right. We are. And that's something that people at both our college and other colleges have been working on. We'd like to encourage veterinary students to consider practicing in rural areas and practicing on horses and other large animal species, because we do have a shortage, and it seems that many people end up wanting to practice either in cities, or they want to specialize in small animal medicine or surgery. And part of that, I think, is, you know, the lifestyle. It is a little bit different lifestyle to be a rural veterinarian and to work on large animals than it is to work in a small animal clinic, because you do have to often go out in the field. There may be longer hours, there may be less people, especially in a rural setting. If you're the only veterinarian in town, there are less people to take emergency calls. So if you're the only veterinarian in town, you may be the one who gets called for everything. And so having more people wanting to enter that field, I think, will help with that. And, you know, there are several other reasons, too, likely why rural veterinarians are at a shortage. And part of that probably has to do with student debt, because, as you know, not just with veterinarians, but with other students, a high debt load is a problem if you think that your income might be lower in one part of the profession than it wouldn't be in another.
And Congress is considering the Veterinary Medicine Loan Repayment Act, an idea that would help repay veterinary student loans if they choose to serve in rural areas, and an issue or a way to possibly address that shortage.
Right. And I think that would be great. There is a loan repayment plan that some veterinarians have participated in that worked in teaching professions, that sort of thing. But I think the rural programs are very important. We need to get veterinarians back out to these places so that people with animals get good care. You know, animals are very important to people. They're not only part of their livelihood, they're part of their families in a lot of cases, whether they be small animals or large. So I think it's good that, you know, that program is a possibility. But I think as veterinary schools, too, we need to try and promote those professions to our students.
Well, Dr. Kasten, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yes, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me, Charity.
Dr. Stephanie Kasten is an associate professor of equine surgery at Iowa State University. She is the vet who saved the horse Jamberry. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.